This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Lay your head down on my shoulder, don't hold it in your hands. Tell me all your troubles and I'll try to understand. I know your heart's still tender and I know that it still hurts. But things can only get better when it seems they can't get any worse. Hold on to me, I won't let you go. You'll be okay, so hold on.
Hi, dear. You're listening to the Fighting Stigma Show here on Free FM 89.0, Tui Nareo o Te Hapori, and also on Raglan Community Radio, Aero FM, Otago Access Radio, and Radio Kidnappers. I'm your host, Haisa, and this week we're talking about a topic that feels subtle, yet it's perhaps the most powerful tool we have in the fight against stigma, which is language. Think about it. Every day, in casual conversation, in text messages, in media headlines, we use words that often unintentionally shame, trivialize, or dehumanize people struggling with their mental health. We might say, that meeting was insane, or, ugh, I'm so OCD about organizing my fridge. These phrases sound harmless, but they are the tiny cuts that bleed stigma into our culture. Stick around for that, but first, a shout out to our sponsor, Progress to Health.
Progress to Health believes in creating communities without barriers, and to achieve that, we tailor supports to adults experiencing mental health and or disabilities based on their goals to encourage recovery, independence, and community involvement. Progress to Health has teams that provide peer support, recovery education, workshops, employment preparation, and support, including navigation with other services. Service users are allocated a community support facilitator on referral depending on their goals to mental recovery and achievement. We have offices in Hamilton, Tokoroa, and New Plymouth. So if that sounds like something you or someone you know might be interested in, and you are in the Waikato DHB region, Taranaki, or Taupō, then have a listen to this ad I'm about to play for Progress to Health and get in touch with us.
At Progress to Health, we provide a range of support for those who have experienced mental illness. People who have dealt with mental illness and associated disabilities are supported holistically to maximise their potential. We want to empower your journey to recovery. Check out our website, www.progresstohealth.org.nz, or call us free on 0800 77 57 57.
You won't miss out on Progress to Health details. I will play their ad again at the end of the show. So stick around and you can grab their contact info if it feels right for you or someone you know. Okay, we're talking about the importance of language and mental health stigma. Imagine if we want to create a world where it's safe to ask for help, we have to make the words we use safe first. So today we're going to cover three main things. The problem with those casual insults, why we need to stop medicalizing the mundane, and how to use the empowering practice of person-first language. Okay, so let's start with the language that was literally designed to hurt. Harmful colloquialisms, the insane or crazy trips. In the English language, we use words like crazy or insane or nuts or psycho to describe just about anything we don't like, understand, or agree with. A traffic jam is insane. A political decision is crazy. But here's the story that's embedded in those words. Historically, terms like lunatic and insane were legal and medical categories used to deny people their rights, institutionalize them against their will, and marginalize them from society. When we use crazy to describe a silly situation, we are drawing a direct, if unconscious, line between the situation and the experience of having a serious mental health condition. We're implying that mental mental difference is equivalent to something bad, chaotic, or ridiculous. The solution here is simple, but it requires mindfulness. If you want to say something is unbelievable, say it's unbelievable. If ridiculous, say it's ridiculous. Let's retire these words from our everyday vocabulary so they stop reinforcing the idea that mental struggle is something to be feared or mocked. Medicalizing the mundane, the I'm so OCD problem. Now let's talk about a different but equally damaging type of language. Taking a serious clinical diagnosis and shrinking it down to describe a minor preference or mood. The most common culprit here is the phrase, I'm so OCD about that. I also like to add, now everyone is saying, oh, I'm a little bit ADHD or such and such is a little bit autistic. We say this when we are talking about arranging our desk, organizing a spice rack, or making sure the pencils are color-coded. But let's be clear, being neat is not obsessive compulsive disorder. That's what OCD is. It's an actual disorder. OCD is a debilitating condition where intrusive, unwanted thoughts, the obsessions, lead to often ritualistic behaviors, the compulsions, that a person feels they must do to reduce the anxiety or prevent a perceived catastrophic event. Imagine feeling you have to check your locked door 50 times before leaving the house and knowing it's irrational, but feeling a wave of panic if you don't. That's OCD, and it's paralyzing. When we use the words, I'm so OCD, to mean I like things tidy, we trivialize that reality. We make it sound like it's personally quirky, when in reality, it's a serious illness requiring treatment. Like I said, this applies to many terms. But for example, feeling moody is not having bipolar disorder. Feeling stressed before a test is not having a panic attack. Being a little withdrawn is not being so depressed. Being forgetful or having difficulties to focus doesn't mean you have ADHD and you can say, I'm a little ADHD. The usage of terms like that makes the actual experience of these illnesses seem less severe, which raises the bar for when someone should legitimately seek help. If the world thinks depression is just feeling sad, then a person with clinical depression feels less validated in their need for treatment. Now let's expand a little bit the focus to include neurodiversity. And I know I mentioned autism and ADHD a bit, so just want to give a little bit of some examples. Neurodiversity simply describes the natural, non-pathological variation in the human brain regarding sociability, learning, attention, mood, and other mental functions, such as executive functioning. For individuals who are neurodivergent, meaning their brains work differently than what is considered the typical, language is a constant battleground. So I'll use, for example, ADHD, beyond hyperactivity. Another common example is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, or ADHD. The stigma here often lies in oversimplification and dismissal. The problematic language, we often hear, they're just lazy, or they need to try harder, referring to them simply as scatterbrained. The better language, instead, we should use language that acknowledges it is a difference in executive functioning, which is the set of mental skills that includes working memory, flexible thinking, and self-control. Another thing that really irritates myself as a person with that experience, ADHD and ADD and autism, is how it became quite common for people to say, oh, such and such is a little bit ADHD, or such and such is a little bit autistic. No, you can't just say because someone is a little bit lazy or a little bit distracted that they are ADHD. ADHD is not a lack of will. It's a difference in brain chemistry related to dopamine and norepinephrine. Using terms like executive function challenges or focusing on attention regulation replaces moral judgment, such as lazy, with medical understanding. It frames this struggle as a genuine difficulty requiring support and accommodation, not a character flaw. ADHD, ADD, autism, and other neurodiversity is incredibly complex, and not a single person experiences the same as the next. It's such an individual complex. You can't just simply put like, you know, it's commonly put. And changes with age, it can change with hormones, it can change with lifestyle. It's very, very complex. Now, avoiding pathologizing strengths. Finally, in neurodiverse context, we must be careful not to pathologize its strengths. For example, instead of focusing solely on the challenges, we should talk about the hyperfocus or deep concentration abilities common in some neurodivergent individuals. By shifting our language to acknowledge the challenges while celebrating the unique cognitive strengths associated with neurodiversity, we move away from stigma and towards true acceptance and inclusion. Just to add, when we discuss individuals in inpatient mental health facilities, the language we use impacts how they are treated. In therapeutic settings, it is a vital shift to refer to individuals as patients, clients, or residents rather than inmates or offenders, unless the facility is specifically a forensic or correctional one. Using patient emphasizes that the person is there for treatment and healing, not solely for punishment or containment. In the professional world, the conversation around mental health has shifted from simply excusing an absence to providing proactive, reasonable accommodation. This change in the terminology reflects a legal and ethical requirement under disability laws. It moves the focus from a one-time failure, like they can't handle the stress, to an ongoing need for support, such as we must structure the environment to help them succeed. This language validates the need to support as a normal part of the work experience. The long-term solution is not just finding a new word, but fundamentally changing the attitude that lies beneath the language. If the attitude remains judgmental, any word we use will eventually be turned into a slur. Our focus must always be on promoting respect and dignity for the person, regardless of the clinical term used. Now I've given you a little bit of the vocabulary that we should be trying to avoid, the casual insults and the misused clinical terms. Let's talk about the language that truly heals and validates, the person-first language. This concept is very simple, yet revolutionary in how it changes perception. It means we separate the individual from their diagnosis. We put the person first, not the condition. Think about the difference between these two phrases. One, he's a schizophrenic. The other is, he's a person with a schizophrenia, or he's a person who also suffers from schizophrenia. In the first phrase, the condition defines the person. It becomes their entire identity. their defining characteristics. They are reduced to a label. I'm an anxious person. I'm anxious. I'm bipolar. In the second phrase, the condition is acknowledged as something they have or experience, but it's not who they are. It respects that they are a complex individual with relationships, dreams, skills, and a diagnosis. The principle applies across the board. We should aim to say, a person is experiencing depression, a person with a substance use disorder instead of an addict, a person who attempts suicide instead of commits suicide, which again implies a criminal act. Now, an important note on this. While the person first is a great standard, we must also acknowledge that some advocacy groups, like many in the autism community, actually prefer identity first language, like saying, I am autistic. The core lesson here is to always defer to the individual's preference. So, for example, if a person introduces themselves and say, I'm autistic, and that's how they like to be referred to, then you respect it. But that's an individual choice. And it's the same with gender and gender identity. If someone tells you that they would like to be referred to as they, then you refer to that person as they, out of respect. But as a compassionate, non-affected ally, using person-first language is the safest, most respectful standard to start with. So if you don't know, that's possibly the most respectful way to refer to someone. Just use, you know, it's a person. It's a mother, father, a sister, a brother, a creative person, a worker, a human being. When we use person-first language, we are actively fighting the stigma that tries to tell people their illnesses is their whole identity. Now, to make this concrete, let's put together a quick cheat sheet, because changing language is a habit and habits need clear substitutions. Here are four quick fixes you can implement right away. Number one, the crazy swap. Instead of describing a situation as crazy, try using words like unbelievable, chaotic, wild, ridiculous, or intense. Number two, the crime swap. If you must discuss the tragic topic of self-harm, never say committed suicide. It's much more respectful and accurate to say died by suicide or took their own life. The identity swap. Instead of labeling someone as an addict, use a person with a substance use disorder. Similarly, instead of saying someone suffers from anxiety, says they live with anxiety or experience anxiety. This avoids framing the entire life as pain. Number four is the simple swap. If someone is going through a tough time, don't ask, are you depressed? That's a clinical term. Ask, are you okay? Or are you feeling down or overwhelmed? Use common empathetic language that invites them to share without giving them a diagnosis, because that's not our job. That's a psychologist or psychiatrist's job. Changing our vocabulary doesn't happen overnight, and that's true. Even though I work in mental health, and I've been working in mental health for about 5 years now, it still catches me by surprise. It's a habit. And when we're constantly hearing those terms around us, it just becomes automatic to say them back. But you need to, like I said at the start of the show, be mindful about it. You know, try it once, try it twice. And if you make a mistake, apologize and try and say it again. Every time you catch yourself and correct the word you use, you're performing an anti-stigma action. You're making the world a slightly safer place for someone to exist and ask for help. Language matters because it sets the standard for how we treat each other. It shapes the laws we pass, the policies workplaces adopt, and the compassion we show on an individual level. Today we talked about discarding words that were once tools of marginalization, retiring clinical terms from casual conversation, and embracing the dignity of person-first language. I want to leave you with this challenge this week. Pick one word, maybe crazy, or maybe OCD, maybe ADHD or autism, and commit to banishing it from your vocabulary. If you hear a friend or a family member use it, gently, kindly correct them. You can simply say, hey, let's try to say ridiculous instead of crazy. That is a really powerful thing. That word, it's really, really powerful. Now, this whole conversation about language in mental health and neurodiversity, it's very, very deep. In 20 minutes chat, it's very hard to bring the depth to it. I will try next year to get some guest speakers that know a lot about this topic, and I'm really excited to share this with you all. But sometimes a conversation can make all the difference. I'm about to play a list of support lines. Grab a pen and paper so you can jot them down and have them ready if you ever need them.
So the first support line that I want to give you is 1737. Now, that's pretty much what it's called. So Need to Talk, 1737. It's a free call or text service, and it's available 24/7, so 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So you'll get to talk or text with a trained counsellor, and this service is completely free. So if you're feeling anxious or run down, depressed, needing to talk to someone, give them a call or give them a text, 1737. The next number I want to give you is the Crisis Assessment Team, or CAT team, and their number is 0800 50 50 50. So that's assistance for people who are in crisis in the Waikato DHB region. So they're a crisis assessment team, they're part of the community mental health, so they are kind of like right up there with when things are going really, really wrong. It's very urgent care is needed around mental health. So that number again is 0800 50 50 50. The next number I want to give you is Lifeline. So Lifeline is an amazing service. It's a 24-hour telephone support service available for anyone needing emotional support. So 24/7, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Now their number is 0800 543 354. And they have trained counsellors and just amazing people that you can have a talk to no matter what time of day it is. The next number I want to give you is the Depression Helpline. Now, the Depression Helpline is related to depression.org.nz. You may have seen some of their ads around, like the with John Kirwan. They have a whole lot of videos on the online service, but this is the phone line service. So Depression Helpline, 0800 111 757. Now, they're if you just have someone, you need someone safe to talk to, they're available from 8 a.m. in the morning to midnight. And they're a really great service, just someone calm and like gentle to talk to about whatever's going on for you. Now, the next number I've got for you is not a mental health support line. It's actually the health line. So it's health information service for all the family, and it's staffed by registered nurses who will give information and advice. I have used this line. It's for general health, medical health, physical health, and it's really amazing because sometimes when things are going wrong with your body, you don't know what's happening. You're not sure if we need to go the ambulance route or you need to go to the hospital. They're trained nurses, so they will actually ask you a bunch of questions. You can answer them, and they'll let you know what you need to do, and it's a huge relief. So the Healthline number is 0800 611 116, and that's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The next number I want to give you is the Suicide Prevention Helpline. Now, this is support, information and resources to people who are at risk of suicide and or the family of family or whānau and friends supporting them. Now, it's available from midday to midnight and their number is 0508 Tautoko, which is 0508 828 865. Now, the next number I want to give you is the Shine Confidential Helpline. And the Shine Confidential Helpline specialises in domestic violence to help keep people safe from abuse. So their number is 0508 744 633. And the last number that I want to give you is I want to give you the Outline. Now, this is a Gay and Lesbian Outline New Zealand. So it's support for people, gay and lesbian people, who want to have someone to talk to about whatever's going on around that, because quite often we need a bit of extra support, and when you're not getting that support, that can definitely lead to mental health stuff. So this is a really great line. So the Outline, their number is 0800 688 5463.
Thank you for tuning into Fighting Stigma. Your willingness to listen and change the way you speak makes you an active, powerful warrior in this fight. Remember, if you or someone you know is struggling with their mental health, please check again the support lines we just shared, and we share them in each and every single one of our shows. The goal of Fighting Stigma is not to judge the individual, but to address the underlying illness. Language is our first tool to make that distinction clear, and it's a powerful one. Take care, and I'll catch you next week on the Fighting Stigma show right here on Free FM 89.0. Until then, be well, be kind, and keep fighting stigma.
At Progress to Health, we provide a range of support for those who have experienced mental illness. People who have dealt with mental illness and associated disabilities are supported holistically to maximise their potential. We want to empower your journey to recovery. Check out our website, www.progresstohealth.org.nz, or call us free on 0800 77 57 57.
Lay your head down on my shoulder, don't hold it in your hand. Tell me all your troubles and I'll try to understand. I know your heart's still tender and I know that it still hurts. But things can only get better when it seems they can't get any worse. Hold on to me, I won't let you go. You'll be okay, so hold on.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.